Okay, we have not only the four major projects that we're talking about in the Constellation series, but a whole variety of other things going on at Central Campus. But I'm going to really focus on the four projects that we're talking about here, with microbial science, right, shows up here in the master plan, the new biochemistry, second biochemistry building I'll talk about today, Institutes for Discovery, and the Union South project. This is an overlay of this district, the campus, for the master plan. And for those of you who haven't seen this before, we finished this in about 2005. All of the black buildings are buildings that exist today that we expect will still exist and be functional 20, 40 years from now. The brown buildings are areas that we believe will be developed in the next 20 years or so. So you can see the central part of campus has a lot going on. So these four projects are really at the vanguard of what is going to happen in the central part of campus. Over here, you can see the various buildings that exist today that we expect to take down in the next 20 to 25 years and replace with new buildings reconfigured in this area. What you see is largely the removal of buildings that were built in the 1960s. And the preservation of buildings that were built between 1900 and 1940. The reason for that is those 1960s era buildings were built fast and cheap. They have bad roofs, they have bad exteriors, they have bad windows, they have mechanical system failures, they're energy hogs, they have really dysfunctional layouts, bad foundations, site work is shoddy. Other than that, they're okay. But so the 1960s era buildings, those 1940s, those 40-year-old buildings are candidates for removal in the next 20 years. 100 years ago, and for 50 years after that, the buildings that were built then had nice floor-to-floor heights. They had really great exterior structures, good foundation, a good roof. We can go in and renovate those buildings and give them another 100 years life. So examples of that are Chamberlain, Sterling Hall, Human Ecology, Ag, and a couple of buildings that we're going to restore here on Henry Mall as part of these projects. So those are the two trends that you see. The other thing you should think about is that we really have two architectural campuses in our plan. Everything north of University Avenue is really a traditional campus that's organized not around a street grid, but around open spaces, around courtyards, green space, in a classical college layout. Everything south of University Avenue is on an urban street grid. So it is really an urban collegiate campus with a completely different character. One that we have really kind of almost irreparably harmed by the way we developed it in the 1960s, where we went and bought commercial functions, tore them down, or just occupied them, and pulled out all the commercial life in this urban area, which now we're going to try and revive through the parts of these projects. So that's a quick overview of the master plan for this part, for this area. Now, let's zoom in on an aerial photo of the way things look today. For the Institutes of Discovery, this is the first phase of the block, and we're actually finishing the demolition plans now for all of the facilities between Orchard Street and Randall. And that will start this spring. Those buildings will all come down and the project will start. The other area for biochemistry, and I'll show you this on the site plan, is in back of Henry Mall, where we're looking to build some significant increased research space for the biochemistry department, which is really bursting at the seams. So we want to do that in a way that gets them more space, but also preserves these historic buildings, biochemistry and ag journalism. Down below, Union South, built just 40-some years ago, is a candidate for demolition, as is this little high-rise building on Dayton Street, to create an entire new block, because we've also purchased the Randall Towers, and we're working with the city to close off that little spur of Johnson Street, giving us this whole block to develop. So that is a tremendous opportunity for us to really change some of the traffic and circulation flow. So as we do these plans, individual projects, it's really helpful to have that master plan template as we think about it, because it gives us a plan to put individual projects in context architecturally, from traffic and circulation, creating pedestrian flow, and creating places, outdoor places as well as indoor places, that add value to the campus. So I'm going to go through and talk about some of the benefits of this. Now, obviously, the site for the Institute for Discovery couldn't have been better for interdisciplinary collaboration. And that's because it's surrounded by many of the disciplines that we want to collaborate in this site. So with microbial up on the top, the biochemistry here, the whole engineering campus here, computer sciences, genetics, biotechnology, some of the medical school, physics, chemistry, literally surrounding this site. We now are in the center of that academic and research world, and that's exactly what we want the Institutes for Discovery to be, is a place for collaboration, not for new departmental space. So functionally, we have an ideal spot to work with from an academic and research standpoint. This is an image from our master plan of 2 years ago, and it shows the potential size of the Institutes for Discovery after physical plant and Brogdon for psychology are removed, and you literally have two full blocks of potential space for the institutes. Obviously, we're going to start out with this first block, and we've come a long way since this early schematic. But this also shows you the size of a Union South, really making a whole new gateway to campus with the Institutes for Discovery and Union South coming all the way up to where Randall Towers is, Johnson Street closed off and developed. So as you come on Campus Drive and onto Johnson Street, now we have a tremendous new gateway entering into campus that has both research and socialization functions at the Union, food service, meeting rooms, even hotel rooms, and parking that will help serve this whole area. So let's zoom in on some of the circulation issues that we are thinking about. A couple of the realities of this site is, while it's a great central location functionally, it has two huge problems, University Avenue and Johnson Street. Both of them average 35,000 cars per day, going pretty fast. So one of the reasons this felt like such an isolated dead area in the past was not only because we had some very minimal, some very small functions there and really no reason to go there very much, but also because it's an island in the two really heavy circulation patterns for the city. Now, we've talked for years with the city on ways to try and manage this traffic, and frankly, because we're in this isthmus, the traffic engineers can't figure out another way to move 35,000 cars east-west other than this one-way pair of Johnson Street and Campus Drive and University Avenue. So we would love someday to go back to the two-way streets of University Avenue and Johnson to just kind of slow everybody down and make it more of a safe, slower urban environment. But that, frankly, is probably not achievable. So what are we going to do about it? One of the things we're going to do is start creating on-the-ground connections that slow traffic down and make it easier for pedestrians to move north-south. The first one is happening now down at University Square, where we put a stoplight on Johnson Street and a stoplight on University Avenue, where the East Campus Mall is going to go north-south. And it's in mid-block, and it stops traffic, and there is no right turns, so there isn't anybody going by, and it's really been tremendously successful. So we're looking at the same model here at Orchard Street, with a redeveloped Union South and a pedestrian corridor on Orchard Street instead of cars unloading dock, filling across with another stoplight here, developing Orchard Street as another pedestrian zone next to the Institutes for Discovery, and then another stoplight here taking you across. So in addition to the stoplights on Randall and Charter, now you have more on Orchard Street, and we can work on the synchronization of those lights to kind of start slowing people down, making them stop more often so it's less of a through road, and making that north-south connection more comfortable. Plus, we're going to bring the buildings closer together so it looks visually a lot closer. So as we started thinking about the Institutes for Discovery, we're looking at their functions in a lot of different ways. Clearly, the number one function for institutes is research. But that largely is on the upper floors. So the town center in education and outreach and interaction is going to take advantage of its central location by basically building a first floor that is a complete outreach floor. So this is a public space on the ground floor that has connections on all four levels. And we looked at a lot of benchmark facilities, some pretty far out. This is the Carl Icahn Laboratory in Princeton. This is a conference meeting room. Or it could be a mastodon, whatever, wherever you want to go with this. This is the inside of it. Personally, I would have a hard time having a straightforward meeting inside a mastodon, but that was their approach. They wanted to do some really breakout architecture, both internally and externally. One of the things that you struggle with in thinking of how research happens when we're trying to make collaboration happen in a design, a facility design, is where do you put the labs? Where's the support space? Where are the PIs? Where are your postdocs and graduate students? How do we assign space so that that interaction is functional? So we looked at other places like Icahn, like Howard Hughes Medical at Genelia Farms, where you see they do kind of swaths of support space, laboratory space, and PI offices, all separated by a double corridor. What you're going to see in all these designs is we are now a long way away from where science was from medieval times till about 1970. And that is, you put a corridor down the middle of a building, and you put some laboratories and support space on both sides. And that's your building design. We have found in talking to scientists and looking at other places that we need to build informal space into buildings so that people can run into each other and have conversations and have reasons to get out of their labs and out of their offices to collaborate. So this is a whole different viewpoint of doing science. And so we're looking at different ways that people have laid out space. On one end of the spectrum is the Clark Center at Stanford, where there literally are no walls. And you can see the design is pretty haphazard. So all the support space is in back, but all of the benches, lab space, and even office pods are simply set out in the middle. This hasn't worked very well. It is completely flexible, but it is really noisy, and people don't feel comfortable without some order and some place where they can stop and think. So it was really nice that Stanford went far out on the spectrum of this design and tested it out for us and spent $120 million so that the scientists could say, this isn't really the way we want to go. So it's great we've had those benchmarks that we can use. So we've come up with a different design for how to set up labs. And we're kind of picking this up by setting up neighborhoods, not unlike what we've done in microbial science and like we've done in some other buildings, where there are intense areas of research with quite a bit of generous space for informal interactions. And the idea is there are places that people have to go to get out of their labs where they'll run into other people. So here you see wet labs and support space surrounded by open areas where the postdocs and research assistants are right next to the labs. This is all very transparent. I'll show you through that. But it's kind of a more open environment. And then the conference rooms and the business centers are out in the middle. And so people have to come out of their labs to go to their offices that are spread out around the building and to go to the business centers and conference rooms that are also spread out. It's also a really airy design so that visually you're seeing the building open, as opposed to feeling like you're in a cubicle, you're in a small lab, and you're cloistered away. So the idea here is to really open it up. We also have instructional labs that I'll talk about that are very open to reconfiguration. Now this group will be interested in the ground floor because this is where the education outreach functions, the commercialization can all happen. And you can see basically we've designed it as an entire open indoor plaza with two atriums. So from the standpoint of getting in this building, there are four entrances on each corner that are close to the other side. So when you're on the sidewalk here, you feel like you can just go across and go right in that building and actually use the building as a crossing point depending on which way you're going on campus. We want it to feel very open, very transparent. You can get in that building. It's a destination. There'll be several different food service opportunities and meeting opportunities on the ground floor. We've designed a really flexible forum area, circular in the middle, that can be configured in the round, in an end. You can take the walls down and just open it up so that the whole thing is open, as well as other meeting rooms in different sizes that are focused around really a big indoor plaza that I'll show you what that looks like. So you're going to have a lot of opportunities here for small groups, medium-sized groups, large group presentations in a very open setting. Downstairs is basically specialty labs that need low vibration. And as we're looking at this, this could be anything from nanotechnology to other server farms, perhaps BSL-3 labs, other support space, very flexible once again. Flexibility and changeability are really one of the main things we're looking at. The lessons we have learned in science buildings and remodeling science buildings is we know every 10 to 20 years there's a whole new science technology that has to be supported. So we need to design buildings that will last for 100 years and get changed 4, 5, 6 times within that 100 years. So this building is changeable. The envelope is strong, the basement is strong, the roof is good, the mechanical systems are good, and then the internal operations are changeable. Now another part of this is up on the corner on University Avenue on each floor is a teaching research lab. This has its own kind of security area so the public can get up on this corner of all the floors and not get into the rest of this. And these are reconfigurable labs that could be for computer science, for engineering focus, wet labs for biology, very changeable areas so the researchers in here or even in other places on campus could come in and teach in a teaching lab embedded into this research function. So that's another big outreach opportunity that will be here. Now, the connection between Institutes for Discovery and UC South is really critical because we're getting rid of, as I mentioned before, we'll take down the Hi-Rey building, we will take down Randall Towers, we'll close that piece of Johnson, and now we've got a really big site that we can put a significantly larger building on. We're looking at potentially double in size and still have a really huge courtyard on the south going down to Dayton Street for outdoor activities. And that's another trend in our designs that we're working very hard on. We're spending a lot of time on what buildings look like and how they perform, how they are open and collaborative in their internal designs. But we also want to have really nice outdoor spaces that people can spill out, meet, and move in and around these buildings, either as pedestrians, on bikes, on scooters, on buses, on trains in the future, so that we can have lots of options for folks to move around campus and feel like they're in interesting spaces. So that is going to be a big part of this design as we work through it. And you can see how now Orchard Street becomes really a pedestrian mall. There's a lot of traffic on bikes and on foot that moves north-south from the Regent Street neighborhood up into campus, from both people who live there and people who park down that area. So having more safe areas that are actually pleasant as opposed to loading docks and parking spaces to walk through is part of this design as well. Here's an idea of what the interiors can look like. So you got lab space on this side. This is the Johnson Street portion of the interior. So the labs are embedded inside here. We've got an open atrium. We've got food service and director's suites and lots of open spaces that are populated with tables, chairs, places where you can run into each other and still see all across there. One of the things we find is we talk to researchers, whether you're a postdoc or a 60-year-old set in your ways principal investigator, is the visual connection within a facility and around a facility is really a great opportunity to run into folks, and not having things closed off is a big part of our design. And you can see the openness and the airiness both horizontally and vertically is a big part of this design. It's also part of our whole sustainability program because we're actually using these atrium as a way to turn over the air naturally as it heats and moves up, rather than have to use really high energy air handling units. So it's really like the lungs of the building. And so without having to run giant fans and all the electricity for this, this building will breathe in these two atriums on its own without any power. And that will be a tremendous benefit from an energy conservation standpoint. This is a model of what it will look like, and you see the three research pods lined up in here with all the internal space surrounding them. So you've got some intensity there. You've also got private places that you can step out to do your work. But you also have lots of shared space in and around the research areas. You can also see how, and believe me, this is not a design. These are just a couple of boxes. But it shows you how Union South and the new Institutes for Discovery will really be a bookend gateway on Johnson Street for the university. And by buying Randall Towers and closing Johnson Street and bringing this building development right up to the edge, now you make that connection from corner to corner here and from corner to corner here very close, feels comfortable, it's safe, and with the stoplights, it'll be easy for people to get across. I am adamantly opposed to this whole bridge over the street thing for a couple of reasons. One, it's really expensive, but that's not the main reason. The main reason is people don't go up to go across. You spend millions of dollars to bring people up and go across, but the fact of the matter is, let's make it safe here because we want people on the street, we want more vitality, we want people moving around. And by taking out all the commercial functions when we took this over in the 1960s, we really made it a dead and less safe place on the street. But by adding people and making destinations and have it be open and well lit with a lot of traffic and close corner to corner, that's where you get the safety and the vitality at the same time. I'm going to switch over to microbial sciences. This is another building. We are now building $120 million around trees. So this swamp oak was a champion swamp oak, and we literally designed the building to save the swamp oak and work around it. But it also was a site where, even though it's 330,000 gross square feet, we wanted to make sure we were building in these kind of science neighborhoods. So this was a precursor to our thinking in the Institutes of Discovery that you can go see today. So you can see how we kind of built these buildings in pods, even though it's one giant building, that allows us to create some mini science neighborhoods and have openings, once again, for people to go out, see each other, provide coffee, food service, in a tactical way, as well as where the business and the symposiums are as well. So this design really both was the only way we could fit all the program on the site, but also save the tree, worked around Hiram Smith, which we're also rehabilitating right now. That'll be open next year. And created some openings, so this is porous. You can walk around this building, or you can walk through this building and use the building as a passageway, which, of course, in the wintertime is a nice thing as we are designing along the way. I'd rather do that than build these bridges. Please, let's not go there. On the ground floor, all of these new science buildings are really rich in multi-seat presentation areas. So here in microbial science, we've got a 100-seat lecture hall, a 200-seat lecture hall, and I think almost 400 in the Ebling Symposium Center. This is programmable space. We need to look at how we use it. It is a spectacular opportunity to once again not only share within the building within the colleges that are participating, but in this general region of campus. And then up above, you see these laboratory and office neighborhoods where labs are here spread out and offices are broken out. One of the reasons we're breaking offices out of labs is both for accreditation and safety, to get food and other things out of the lab, but it's also a practical energy element. By having the offices separate, we don't need to change the air in those offices as much as we need to do in the labs. And that is a significant energy savings to separate the two. We can use recycled air in the offices. We need to have 100% fresh air changes in the labs for safety. So the more we can narrow that space down, the more money we can save on energy bills. So here's the interior atrium of microbial science, and you can see horizontal and vertical visual connection. Once again, you wouldn't see this in laboratory buildings in the past. You just have a long corridor that you might bump into somebody passing by, but that most of the time you are cloistered in your labs. Here the idea is, let's get people out of their labs at times and into running into each other, and then also invite the public into these buildings in public areas that we can secure the rest of the areas, the labs themselves, but still the public can now participate in science. So you can bring public events into these symposiums or into classrooms, or even have a dinner in the atrium and expose them to the science that's happening here. So let's decentralize that. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the biochemistry building. Now, this is the site the way it is today. So here's the new biochemistry building. Here's 12 and 37, 57, 85, ag journalism. So when you look at this site, and we're sitting down with the biochemistry folks, and they say, okay, we need maybe 180, 200,000 square feet of more research space, and we want it right next to the biochemistry building. So a solution doesn't really pop out at you when you see that, as you can see. And so as we studied this, we thought that this is a great opportunity to save the 12, the 37, and the ag journalism building and spend more money and put the modern research tower right back here, replacing this segment of biochemistry, which was built in 1956 for the most part. Tear that out. There's an American elm right here, which survived all of the Dutch elm disease, largely because it was a single elm and wasn't part of a neighborhood of elms, which spread the disease, so we lucked out, and plus it was treated. So once again, we're working around a tree. And then we have John Stuart Curry murals in this portion of the biochemistry building. And then this whole area is a historic district. And we did such a horrible job over here when we did Stovall Hall and old genetics. We took a step up in biotechnology, but not as good as we could have done. Now we're trying to really set the bar on this side up high for both historic preservation and expanding the laboratory needs, research needs for biochemistry. The other thing you can see about this design, and frankly, as you can see the rest of this part of campus, is thinking about pedestrian access was never a consideration. I mean, there are so many dead ends, there's almost no wayfinding in this whole part of campus, that visual cues and interesting places to go outside, other than Henry Mall itself, are almost completely absent. So we want to not only have great interior spaces, but we want to make great exterior spaces and rationalize the connections as we work on this. So here's the plan. We remodel the biochemistry building on 12 and 37. We remodel the ag journalism building and keep the exteriors, the roof lines, and basically preserve them for another 100 years. We tear down the 85 wing and build a new tower of biochemistry here. But while we do that, we pull it back so that we can make a pedestrian walkway that parallels Henry Mall and connects University Avenue with Linden. We also make a connection from biochemistry out to Henry Mall and make this a pretty space as well, with some outdoor food service spilling out from a little cafe in this area or a coffee shop in that area. So once again, the ideas here are not only to plug in these buildings, but also to put them in a setting that adds value to campus.
When you say tower, what's the projected floors?
It's looking like about 8 stories, and I've got an illustration in a second to show you exactly how that fits in. So once again, we're embedding in more presentation space. So there's a big classroom here and a couple of symposium rooms in the old biochem building. Actually, what will happen is we'll basically gut this whole center, including that portion of the University Avenue wall, will come down. We'll build all this new. We're saving the bricks. And after we get done building this, we're going to rebuild that wall and make it historically the same wall on University Avenue. And then the Ag Journalism building will be gutted and rebuilt into offices and IT centers to serve the laboratory building in the back. So you're going to have some more meeting spaces in this really interesting area. And this is what it looks like if you were across this Henry Mall looking at it. So here's biochemistry and ag journalism, the new research tower, the walkway going across. And there is, in this case, a 20-foot connection between the buildings up on the second floor because it takes you right from those classrooms right into the research building. That is an example of where you've got really high functioning areas that need to connect right back and forth in a close vantage point. So you're not crossing a street, you're just really connecting the two buildings together. The other view, if you were looking at it from mechanical engineering, is here. You can see we're trying to be really careful with the surfaces we use here. This is a terracotta that will match into the stone and the brick that we're plugging in here. So we've got a science building that now has materials that, while they're 21st century design, they have materials that reflect the neighborhood architecture. And we're trying to be really careful about that. So when you start looking at illustrations now, you're down on the ground, this gives you an idea, including the penthouse, you're looking at about 7 stories. And frankly, we needed that. That was driven up a little higher because we saved ag journalism in the 1912 buildings. And we needed, in order to get the lab space in that smaller footprint, it had to go higher.
What are you going to do for ADA access to 12 and 37?
From the courtyard, everything is accessible. So this is flat, this is flat. You get into both of these buildings and this building through that courtyard. Completely accessible. We don't want to change the historic steps here, but there will be at least 2 other accessible entrances in those buildings. And this just gives you an idea of the amount of time we're spending on making that courtyard connection, this one going from Henry Mall, and then of course there's the other one going up to Linden Drive, an important part of this design. As you look right straight through to from Henry Mall to the biochemistry building, and this is the area where you could spill out from a little coffee shop in the basement of Ag Journalism. So I'll stop there and take questions.
Where does Ag Journalism go? Life Sciences Communication?
They're moving up to Hiram Smith. That's why we're remodeling it.
You put a lot of emphasis on pedestrian navigation, and as car navigation systems have become incredibly popular. Well, we worked on providing PDA or iPod, iPhone type-based navigation for pedestrians on campus. Is that a possibility?
I'm going to go to you on that one, Steve.
Yeah, that's been brought up quite a bit from our standpoint. It's still, in our minds right now, extremely important to have the personal interaction, especially with our tour guides. There's a lot of personal anecdotes that are added during a visit, but it's something that's on our radar screen that we're taking a look at, especially as this campus continues to grow and redevelop. It's something that's on our radar screen.
One of the benefits of Union South in this plan is that part of the programming for that will be how do we make this a transportation hub as well. So obviously pedestrians are going to want to have access to this from all levels. We're going to, where do we park bikes? Can we use some of the underground parking for bikes as well? We look at most of the building having significant underground parking, and that will replace the parking we lose here, plus add to it a little bit in this area. So you'll have parking in that area. We're also looking at building in some sort of bus hub for Madison Metro, as well as our campus buses in this area. And then, of course, this is a stop on the commuter rail line as well that will be incorporated into the plan. We'll actually put a commuter rail stop into the plan so we can enable it when that ever happens. We wouldn't have to change anything in the building, and that north edge of the building would become a commuter rail stop as well. So that'll be included in the designs as we move forward. So transportation here, in all modes, is really a central part of this. And if we're going to bring people here, we need to figure out how to bring school buses here as well. So as we do that, the goal, as we've been talking with Union South, is we want to have this be the same kind of stop that the Capitol is. So if everybody comes down to Madison and you go to your Capitol visit, then you come down here and you park, and it gives you access to the Geology Museum. I know the atmospheric weather, the meteorology folks are trying to do something. If we can stage parking on Dayton Street, we can get all those kids and school visits into Union South. That's where we want them to start, stage, have something to eat. Maybe there's a meeting room there. And then move off either into Institute for Discovery, biochemistry, up to microbial science, over into engineering. I mean, it's the perfect spot to do some staging. There isn't going to be room for bus parking here, so we're going to be drop-off, and we're going to have to work on where to park buses, but that's all thinking about how to use this as a destination.
Along those lines, you show on, this is the old one, and you still have a pedestrian walkway there. Once you get these school groups or these groups of elderly people coming on coaches to Union South, how do you get them to microbial sciences? In other words, can we design these buildings so that there are school bus or coach bus drop-off areas, even if it's just low curve or that type of thing? It's one of the biggest problems we have with this building right here is that we do not have an easy place to do that.
Well, Henry Mall is not going to be a friendly place for school buses to drop off. But Dayton Street will be. And then Linden Drive can be as well. So frankly, from a safety standpoint, Linden Drive and Dayton Street are the places where large amounts of school buses can be planned for. Beyond that, Johnson and University and Henry Mall are going to be very difficult.
And you can do that with kids who are 10 and 12 and 14 and who can walk real well, but if we try to do this with more and more of our groups are elderly groups. I had two busloads of Wisconsin master farmers. They must have been close to age 80 on average. What can we do to make it easier for them to get their buses closer to these buildings so they don't have to walk as far as middle school to be able to?
I don't know. That's, as we put in the plans, we're going to have to think about that. The issue is in some ways is paramount about safety, and I would be, you want to be get them as close as you can, and then maybe there are places you can take them that you need to do your programming where it's easier. Maybe you do more of that in microbial science, or maybe you do more of it in Union South, or even in the engineering campus where you can get in and drop people off at the door. It will be very difficult to do that on Henry Mall or in this block. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
And if we can't do anything with Orchard.
Orchard Street is going to be a pedestrian zone as much as we can. It will be one way coming down University Avenue in here, largely because we need to have some FedEx and other delivery opportunities. So that is a possible solution for drop-off. Go ahead.
There's also a small but significant group of teachers who drive their own buses, and then they find themselves separated from their passengers, having to go park the bus. hadn't even thought about solving that.
Well, once again, there may be some limited number of places you could take one bus, but there aren't very many places where you can stage a lot of buses and just pull them up to a destination and park them. And, you know, part of it is going to have to be, how do we get people so they can drop off and then there's a place to go park and then come back and pick up. That's, you know, frankly, the reality that we're going to have to deal with this, because on this campus, there aren't many places we can pull up and park a bus and leave it. Go ahead.
Is it part of the flavor of our campus, the fact that we have pedestrians and local bus transit, and can't you just add that to the experience? Like, okay, let's plan to get on the bus.
Well, you know, that probably works for small groups, but frankly, if you're bringing 40 or 50 people down, whether they're young or old, you know, any kind of safety challenge, you're going to want to efficiently figure out a path for them, and that's why drop-off is the best alternative rather than pull up and park, unless you want to go visit the track soccer field. We could probably work that out.
And staging systems for denser urban areas where large truck deliveries, things, people have worked on the same,
yep,
very same problem. They come in to deliver, they may be staged at a nearby truck stop several miles out, or you can have them at a big lot of places.
Well, we do that for campus. We do that for campus now. You don't see semis delivering on campus because we have a materials distribution system where the semis go off-site and we bring things in smaller trucks. So that's a reality of our campus. Go ahead.
Do you have an approximate date for the phase one of Institutes of Discovery to be completed?
We're looking at 2010 for Institutes for Discovery phase one, and I think probably 2011 for Union South. Biochemistry will be around 2011. So some big changes in the next couple of years.
And then for phase two, is that even in the... That's just unknown, right?
You know, somebody else is going to have to do phase two. That's my honest answer. It's like, this whole thing is wearing me out. So. Go ahead.
The library is disappearing.
In the plan, Wendt Library goes away and is incorporated into two big engineering buildings that create another bookend for Henry Mall down in front of Engineering Hall. The idea is to have courtyard and green space for Union South between Union South and Dayton Street, and also create a link down into the Grand Army of the Republic Park here as well. I mean, this is really nice to have bookended green space over time in that location.
You sound really committed to that. Is that an issue, or?
Well, I think Dean Piercy is completely committed to try and find a way to integrate the remaining viable Wendt Library functions back on the engineering campus, because frankly right now Wendt Library's utilization is largely as a study hall, not as an information research place. And so we got a lot of money tied up in campus. When I was just talking to Doug this morning, Doug Rose, our space management, we have 800,000 square feet of library space on campus. In the digital age, we have to think about what we convert that space to. And frankly, Ken Frazier and the library are actively thinking about that as well. We need to, that's a big question in the future. Yeah?
What are the plans for Sterling Hall?
Sterling Hall, now that physics has moved into Chamberlain, we are about 60% of the way into design to rebuild the astronomy wing.
Right.
And the astronomy will go in there, and then we will rehabilitate the exterior and upgrade the interior, and L&S will move in there.
L&S?
Yep.
Any particular part of it?
They have it all. There's nothing else available.
No. I mean, any particular department or?
It's up to the dean.
L&S.
Yep. I try and, you know, as much as possible, stay out of those kinds of decisions. Yes?
You mentioned the GAR Park and the arch there. I walk by there every day. I'm kind of disappointed that it's such a cluttered
viewscape. We're coming up on the centennial of that, and the 150th anniversary of Camp Randall. Is there any possibility that we could get that cleared up so that when you're looking down Dayton there, you just don't see a bunch of...
We're doing a utility project. Right now, our utilities from this portion of campus around Camp Randall ends right here at Randall.
Yeah.
We need to connect that up here, and we need to connect it over to the infamous Charter Street plant. And when we do that, we're going to reconfigure Randall so that we have bike lanes on both sides, and we have a better parking and transportation, probably a pullout for buses by Union South. And when we do that, we've negotiated with MG&E to bury all the utilities, and we'll take out the lights on this side, and there won't be anything on that side of the street.
So it'll look much more attractive.
Right.
I think that will give us a historical destination on this part of campus that we've always had, but haven't been able to really.
We're trying to celebrate our history in a way that in the past we've compromised.
What's the timeline on that?
The utility project we're planning for the 09-11 budget.
What about the coal plant?
The coal plant...
Good headlines this week.
Yeah, well, the coal plant is going to require some significant investment. We bought the original boilers for the Charter Street plant used from the Hudson car plant in Kenosha in 1955. I think they were certified pre-owned, though. So we have an aging technology that needs to be replaced, and for the last 4 years, we've tried really hard to get the state interested in spending what will require, if we're really to convert Charter Street plant, hundreds of millions of dollars to clean the plant up, allow us to burn more biomass. We need to have coal as part of our fuel inventory, because to rely 100% on natural gas on this campus is to just ask for major reliability problems. But we can diminish the amount we use coal. We can burn it a lot cleaner. We can incorporate a lot of biomass. We can generate more of our electricity so we don't have to buy it from MG&E there. And the combination of all that literally is hundreds of millions of dollars. For not surprising reasons, we haven't had a lot of traction on spending that amount of money at Charter Street, and frankly, I think we have a better chance now. I'm looking at that as a good thing.
And whose hand got slapped? Was it ours or was it the state's?
Well, if you read the decision, the judge removed the campus and UW system representatives from the lawsuit and left the Department of Administration people. That's because, you know, it's one of those things where the department administration wants to be in charge of everything unless there's a problem, and then it's the campus's problem. You've probably heard this before. In this particular event, frankly, I was happy to go take the black eye and talk about it as a campus problem, because we're gonna try and clear some space for the state to then invest in the plant. And if the result of this political maneuver is that they can ride in on the white horse and clean up the plant for the campus, I'm fine with that.
If you could make that a bioenergy destination demonstration area, that would be fantastic.
Well, that's the whole idea, is to get a fluidized bed boiler, 21st century combustion kind of technology in there that burns literally anything. And then that allows us to have a commercialized boiler that we can test a variety of fuels in conjunction with our Great Lakes Bioenergy Project. There's complete synergy there. The Sierra Club wants us to go to all gas. If we go to all gas, not only is that a reliability problem, but it also means that we will never meet the governor's biomass combustion goals. We will never do any demonstration projects on different kinds of fuels that can be used. And those are really important goals for us to participate in. And that means we're going to have some coal burning capacity, but we need to do a lot better job of doing it.
Again, a timeline question on that. Any idea how much time?
It's like almost kind of hour by hour right now. It's like I have my morning Charter Street meeting and my afternoon Charter Street meeting for the last month and a half. So who knows?
Well, it's great when you want to make snowmen and you can actually go get the little pieces of coal.
Exactly, right. You know, we could put that out in a barrel next to the plant, though, and we don't really have to have the coal piles in there.
That 1961 experience.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe one more question? Go ahead.
How
are things going with the cogen plant in terms of performance versus predicted performance and cost?
Well, its performance is very good. The problem is the regulatory world of electric dispatch changed while we were building the plant. When we put the plans together between campus and the state and MG&E, MG&E was going to be the entity that decided when to generate electricity there. And, of course, the benefit of this is if we can generate electricity and then use that steam to heat and cool the campus, we've now doubled the efficiency of the plant. Well, in the meantime, the regulatory framework changed so that now there's a regional dispatch entity called MISO that tells all the plants in a 7-state area when they run and when they don't run based on economic dispatch, not necessarily demand or environmental functions. So what that means is all the coal plants get dispatched first, and then the natural gas plants get dispatched later. So we're generating probably a lot less electricity, and we're turning the plant on and off a lot more frequently to match what the region needs than we would have if we would have been just running it ourselves with MG&E. And the reality of that is we're going to have to go back and talk to the Public Service Commission about the effects of that. But we're still running probably a third of the time or more in a cogeneration mode where we are generating electricity and heating and cooling the campus. Unfortunately, we designed the chilled water and steam aspects of that so that we can run independent from the electric generation function because we have to have that heating and cooling capacity for the west side of campus. So I would say the cogeneration mode is probably less than we would have planned had this regulatory change not occurred. And now we need to figure out what we can do about that. And frankly, that will probably be part of the discussion about what we do at Charter Street as well.